The rules of the league competition are that we play 38 games. We haven't played 38 games. I've indicated that I personally think the fairest way forward is the alternative that's been suggested, which is a slight reconstruction of the leagues, and I think that's fair. I don't think anybody suffers in that scenario. Whereas if we go down the relegation route, I think there are four clubs who will significantly suffer, and I don't think it benefits anybody.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Milton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Still on lockdown. Still on lockdown, but hey, maybe not for long. Not for long. And as we found out this week, Germany have gone back into training. So we're going to have a bit of a discussion about that. But the dominant thing this week in the UK, anyway, in a certain part of the UK, was news that Scottish football is in meltdown because of the league trying to come to an amicable agreement about the end of season and not really succeeding in that at all, and actually rubbing quite a few people up the wrong way. And now open civil war has broken out, if you read some papers. But first, guys, I just want to talk about where we are in how we're feeling about football at the moment, because I don't know about you guys, but it was a beautiful weekend. This is the Easter weekend we've got at the moment, and usually Easter is packed full of football. I looked on Flash Scores the other day, and I've got all of our teams on my favourites page. I clicked on it and I saw all the matches that were coming up over the weekend, and I saw that Sunderland had Wimbledon this weekend, I think on Good Friday. They had another match tonight, which we'd have had to work the podcast around. It's that sort of time of year where you start thinking, actually, I wonder when the FA Cup semi-finals would be. And then I looked up, they should be next weekend. And this week coming up, it should be the second leg of the quarterfinals in the Champions League. This sort of time is the beginning of the business end of the season, when football really starts to ramp up and every game you watch on the telly has got some level of importance to it. And I think this was sort of the first time, I think, in this whole sort of lockdown that I've really sort of thought, oh man, yeah, football is not coming back anytime soon, is it? And I really want it, because I'm really in the mood now to watch some very important football. I don't know, how are you guys holding up? How do you feel about football at the moment?
Well, I haven't been teasing myself like you have. You're really putting yourself through the mill.
Yeah.
Well, I've been watching Sun Until I Die, which I was saying I haven't been putting myself through the mill. I've been watching Sun Until I Die, and it's just, that show depresses me so much. It really is. It's torture for me, because it starts off, as anybody who knows that's seen the show, it starts off with that lovely ballad, the Lake Poets who wrote it. It's about his grandfather who used to work in the docks, and he's harkened back to this more proud time. So that gets me going every time, and I refuse to skip it. And then you go through that roller coaster across the season, all the things that go wrong. I finish every episode. I can only watch one a day, otherwise I'd probably have to seek professional help. But thankfully I've finished it now. And I feel like, and it's Easter as well, so it's a rebirth for me personally. So today I started watching the official film of the 1986 World Cup.
Oh, nice choice.
Which Michael Caine narrates. Yes. And it's a little bit cheesy with the music, but that was the first World Cup I remember. And I'm really enjoying it. So, you know, there are still ways to enjoy the beautiful game.
Yes. Terry, how about you?
I have to confess, I've rinsed myself with football for the last few weeks. It hasn't stopped me from recording podcasts about it. I did a podcast on German football yesterday with Nick. I did a Talking Fußball with Nick yesterday. And so I'm still doing my content creation. But in many other respects, I have to say, rinse myself with it. Before this whole thing went down, due to a combination of factors, none of which are terribly important or serious, I was feeling a little bit fatigued with football and looking forward to the end of the season. So actually, this has come along at the right time, and it's been, I mean, however long it's been now, and I'm managing fine. So I'm hoping that that one of the significantly less important casualties of this whole business won't be my passion for football. I'm assuming at some point it'll come back, but I've just been doing other things right now. So, and then checking in every week or so to talk about football with you guys and occasionally Nick, and then going back to whatever it was I was doing, which is, well, when I left, it was Big Bang Theory. But, you know, there'll be others as well.
Yeah, I must admit, as far as Arsenal's concerned, I mean, the season was over anyway. So there wasn't that much. It was more of a sort of general football feeling for me, I must admit. But yeah, and I haven't got into Sunderland Till I Die yet. And I'm sure it obviously will affect you more than will it affect me. But I've got that on hold waiting for me to watch. But I'm glad you've worked through it now. And mind you, like from what you say, it doesn't sound too dissimilar to your experience of watching Sunderland anyway.
Well, yeah, it typifies it. It's the, you know, the promise of some achieving something great, and then having that snatched away at the last minute, even though you kind of knew that was probably the way it was going to be. I think when I went to the playoff final and it was against Charlton, I knew we weren't going to come away with it. I just felt it. It just wasn't going to be the way that I wanted it to be. But yeah, it does typify what it's like to be a Sunderland supporter, which is, you know, thoroughly miserable. But what can you do? You can't get away from it. I'm not going to become a Newcastle supporter, am I?
You can record podcasts. That's what you can do.
I can.
So, Terry, when you did your talking football the other night, was the subject of discussion the fact that the teams had gone back into training?
Well, you just had to listen to it, Graham, and find out. No, I'm joking. Yes, it was. A large portion of the podcast, as you can imagine, was based on the fact that German football clubs are back in training. Albeit under social distancing rules. They're not allowed to handle the ball. They're not allowed to tackle each other. They have to maintain social distancing. So with a view to going back to football behind closed doors in May, it's widely expected that the lockdown will end sometime soon, week, maybe 2 weeks from now. And then that will allow sporting events to take place under certain conditions. But I mean, as Nick and I were discussing, that it's still, we feel, an intensely problematic plan. And we did speculate as to whether or not it might not go ahead anyway.
For international listeners, Germany's approach to the COVID-19 outbreak has been something used by critics of the government in the UK with its own plans or lack of to combat the spread of the virus. Germany has had, at the time of recording, over 2,500 people have died in Germany through COVID-19. Germany is a much larger population than the UK, and the UK have had four times as many deaths over the same period. The number of people tested in Germany is an order of magnitude greater than it is in the UK. So there is a sense that they are more on top of the situation, going on the testing route rather than concentrating solely on lockdown. And so there's been a lot of people looking at what's going on in Germany and saying, why isn't that happening over here as well? But obviously there is still the problem there of COVID-19 there. And of course, no one is suggesting that they go back to normal. I think the term they're using at the moment is Geisterspiele, isn't that the one?
Geisterspiele, yeah, ghost games, which is basically what the name used for games that are closed, played behind closed door, ghost games. The plan is for them to hold these games with a minimum number of players and officials and staff, and hold the games in fairly quick succession, assuming that all the players are able to be tested. They have to be tested two or three times a week. And also, I mean, you know, like, for example, and this is going to make you laugh, because can you remember during VAR? they're going to put plexiglass in between the VAR refs in Cologne, which to me is just absurd. I mean, I must confess, On a moral basis, I find it reprehensible, even at this point that they're doing, that they're thinking about doing this. But the idea of returning VAR, I mean, just for, this is just utterly absurd. And also perhaps a bit of a giveaway as to perhaps thinking that this is not likely to happen. I can't help but think that this is a sucker to the broadcasters and the sponsors who are owed money, or at least are expected to pay money, into the Bundesliga for completing the season, and that this is all happening way too soon. I mean, Germany have got a handle on this in a much better way than in the United Kingdom, but PPE equipment and lack of testing, these are still issues that affect Germany, only not as much as they do in the United Kingdom. And the idea of footballers being tested to the extent that they do, of, that are being, in order for them to play games, in order to satisfy contractual and commercial agreements, I don't imagine that that's being terribly well received in Germany. And while I appreciate that there's an appetite perhaps to try and get something going that will, engage the public while they have to, still, if not in lockdown, they have to, cope with this virus. It all seems terribly unseemly and in many ways quite impractical.
Germany's political situation is a lot different to how it is over in the UK. It's a federal system of government. So you've got each area's got its own president, and they all sort of come together in a parliament. But the guy who is in charge of North Rhine-Westphalia, which is an area which has a lot of football teams in it, he's behind getting games back behind closed doors. But it's going to be as much a political thing in Germany as it is over here. So people are going to get very emotional about it, and football has to be seen to be doing the right thing. It has to be setting an example for everyone. We've said this before on the last few weeks. The idea of countries going back to playing football while people are still dying in hundreds every day, it's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it may well be possible in a few weeks for Germany to do that without having that that levelled at them. I do worry, though, that the German decision may, and through no fault of their own, impact our own return to normality, if you like, or a kind of normality on the football field, that is, because Germany is a stick that the press are using to beat, or some portions of the press are using to beat the government over their handling of the COVID crisis here. And I just wonder if Germany goes back to even just having their ghost games, that the authorities here may go, well, if we give them their football back, maybe they'll stop complaining. I really hope that wouldn't be the case, given the gravity of the situation. But I can't help think that if you've got other countries starting to return to a level of normality, and the UK is, as is being suggested, one of the worst affected countries in Europe, if not the world, that it may force it, well, not necessarily force the hand, but it may encourage individuals who have made poor decisions in the past to make another poor decision, and allow sport to kick back off here, which I think would be a real own goal.
Terry, what's your opinion on that? I mean, if you've got the football authorities desperate to get back and play because of the money that they're going to miss out on otherwise, and the bills that they need to pay, but you've also got perhaps a political movement of saying, yeah, if we're going to have bread and circuses, if the shelves are empty of bread, then we need circuses. Is that a viable political stance, or do you think it's a toxic one for any political party to get behind something like that?
Yeah, and I think that the only way that you could probably be able to justify it from a moral point of view would be is if it was understood that there was a consensus amongst the population that this was something that they wanted to do and that they were willing to accept the consequences. And it is just worth reminding ourselves that contracting COVID-19 and surviving COVID-19 doesn't necessarily guarantee immunity. That hasn't been established yet. In fact, there have been cases in South Korea where people who apparently have had COVID-19 and then had it again. So we are a very long way away from mass events taking place again. Until a vaccine, really, there's every likelihood that we won't be seeing football, you know, mass events and similar events happening for months. You know, I mean, the earliest, very earliest expectation of a vaccine is September. And that is considered, yeah. I think that's probably really wildly optimistic,
yeah.
massively optimistic. It's probably, it could be as long as 18 months. And actually, that's a short time to yeah. develop a vaccine. That is actually a medical yeah. miracle in of itself. So we're in for the long haul here. And the reality is that clubs have got maybe 2 or 3 months on their own without football before they start going bankrupt. Kicker reported, I think it was 13 of the 30-odd Bundesliga 1 and 2 clubs could be out of business within the next two or three months. And for reasons we were talking about last week. And so the matter is very, very serious in that respect. And you can understand why there is a need to do that. So it is it's imperative, really. I mean, in terms of bread and circuses, you know, I mean, there's things that you can do that are less complicated in order to provide entertainment than holding football matches. Mm. And you know, I mean, there's the world of light entertainment is rife with formats that are entertaining and considered significantly less dangerous. In these circumstances, holding football matches. From my point of view, that I think is probably the road that they should be going down. But you're right, Graham. The worry is that we over here are as much as possible being patient about all of this. But the anger and the frustration is going to start to really boil over when we see Germany coming out of lockdown. Norway is scheduled to come out of lockdown as well. But even those countries are saying, when we stop the lockdown and we let people out, we then have to be prepared for the fact that there'll be another influx of COVID-19 just by the mere fact that people are now starting to go about their business and the economy starting to restart again. So, you know, this is not a I don't really think this is a time to be playing games at all, personally, but I fully appreciate that there's a dire commercial need to do it. And it's not just about greed. I mean, they've had a Japanese bank, the one that, I can't remember the name of it, the one that bought Lehman Brothers in 2008. They're lining up a £750 million loan to the DFL to help keep the clubs tied over. But amongst two divisions, that's not likely to be a great deal. So, you know, it's pretty desperate there, and I imagine it's no different anywhere else.
Yeah, this is one of the worrying things. I've seen stories coming out recently of large influxes of money coming into the game. FIFA were opening their bank account and going to start spreading it around for leagues that are in dire financial trouble. But all I can think of when something like that is announced is that, well, who's underwriting that? And who are they mortgaging football's future to? And yeah, probably it is the fact that they've probably got enough in their gold store in Zurich to actually pay off all these debts. But there is the thought as well that, no, it's not. It's coming from somewhere far more sinister, and these are the people who are going to own football's future. Well, I mean, Terry, you've said it before on this. This is the golden age for the disaster capitalists, isn't it? Football is in a perilous situation. Well, clubs are. And as such, the football bodies are, because if the clubs that make up these football bodies go under, then the football bodies go under as well. And that's when other people start coming in and say, well, we've got a shed load of money. Why don't you come and join us? Or we'll help you sort yourself out. Oh, by the way, we now own you. So, yeah, it's worrying times ahead. But as well, if you try to make a positive action, if you try to say, right, okay, let's sort things out, things get complicated, don't they, Jan?
Well, they do. And they certainly have north of the border, if that's what you were hinting at. So in Scotland, the clubs all came together and decided that they wanted to end the season for everyone apart from the Premier League and pay out all the winnings and accept who goes up and who goes down. And that's just going to be the way it works. And I think the motivation behind that was that the clubs in the lower leagues have got absolutely no income. In fact, all of the clubs have got no income, but particularly in the lower leagues where, you know, they're probably living hand to mouth, if you like, even just during the normal season. They would get some money which would enable them to stay afloat and hopefully be ready when the season restarts, whenever that may be. And as I understand it, the decision behind the Premier League was to delay it in the hope that UEFA may soften their approach on any country that decides to cut their season short, because there were talks of bans and embargoes and things like that. So the idea was, I think it sounded like a fairly sensible idea. But of course, until today, when I started reading up on it, I didn't realise how many nooks and crannies and little interesting relationships exist in Scottish football, which has made this a very, very fascinating insight into what could be. Some of this is unique to Scotland, I would imagine. This discussion is going to happen in England at some point, and other leagues. This shines a light on what could be the doomsday scenario.
Yeah, exactly. So they all got together on Friday, and they didn't get together on Friday because everyone's social distancing. And I think this is what half the problem was. I think if they'd managed to get everyone in a room together, they would probably have been able to succeed in moving something forward, or actually find out what most people's problems were with. But there were lots of people who didn't vote. There were some people who voted against it. And Dundee were ones that haven't committed themselves at all to it.
Yeah, theirs is really interesting, actually. So in the Championship, Inverness, who are second, and Partick Thistle, who are Kent, which is bottom, voted outright, no, we don't want to do this. And you can kind of see why those clubs in those positions would take that view. The interesting one was Dundee, as you said. So they submitted their ballot, which said, no, we reject this. And then the authorities received an email from Dundee saying, if you've received a ballot return for us, you should ignore it because the club hasn't voted in this ballot, which threw everything into disarray. I mean, there's disarray going on in the Premier League as well, which we'll come to. But Dundee's one was really interesting because of that really bizarre set of circumstances that played themselves out on Friday evening. I mean, the rules of the game north of the border is that you've got 28 days to respond on any motion that is tabled. However, I think the spirit of all this was that they would wrap it all up that evening. But interesting, reading some of the Scottish press today, it seems that Dundee are one of only six clubs that have insurance in place that would cover them in the event of something like this happening. So they're not necessarily in any kind of rush. And apparently, their chairman, John Nelms, has come back with alternative plans, one of which involved the freezing of any promotion and relegation. Of course, his club sits in, I think it's third or fourth, so they're within a playoff position. So again, curtailing the season means that he misses out on a potential promotion. But what's interesting as well is that preventing any promotion or relegation means that Dundee United, who are running away at the top, who happen to be just across the road and massive rivals of Dundee, won't get promoted. I suspect there's more to this than, well, we're all right, but it could well be. And forgive me to any of the good people of Dundee if I've misread that situation. But when I did read it, I thought, yeah, he's probably going, yeah, and I can give those boys a kick as well. So it's quite interesting. The one I was going to refer to in the Premier League. So Hearts and Rangers were also voted against this. Now, Hearts are bottom, so you can kind of understand that they'd want to kind of, we could potentially, unlikely, but potentially climb out of this. With Rangers, they're a good way behind Celtic, but they basically just don't want Celtic to win the league, I think is what's been said. And they've also made some insinuations and some allegations against the leadership of the Scottish authorities, saying that they're incompetent, but they haven't put meat on the bone on that. But to me, their point that Celtic shouldn't be given the title unless they've completed the season kind of smacks of, well, we just don't want Celtic to win it, which, you know, that's fair enough.
Yeah, that's the kind of pettiness that I can get behind.
Yeah, I mean, I read it and I just thought, well, I mean, could I imagine a scenario where Rangers would say, yeah, we'll quite happily gift Celtic the title and they can go into Europe at our expense? That's never going to happen.
No, quite rightly so. They'd never live it down. They'd never live it, and they know it. They know they'd never live it down. So, yeah, I mean, I can totally understand the point of view of Rangers. I can understand that point of view. I don't pretend to understand the mechanics and the emotions of the Old Firm rivalry because I daren't try. I've never even been to Glasgow. So, obviously, but I mean, yes, I mean, from an outside point of view, it does. You can see why they would do that. And you can certainly see Hearts' position. There's, you know, an opportunity for them to save themselves from relegation. And in the midst of all of this going on, the economic effects of relegation as well will be even worse for them. So in addition to COVID-19 and the lockdown. So from their point of view, they could argue that we're trying to save the future of our club. It'd be difficult to argue against that.
I think what is fascinating and one thing I wonder how it will play out in if this happened in England. Of course, the divisions are and other competitions are available, but the self-interest in some of this, and you could argue a thread of sectarianism playing through this as well, but the self-interest, which I know clubs have got to look after themselves, but I hope that through this very public falling out that they will find a way through that suits everyone, because at the moment Scottish football is tearing itself apart, and if they don't find a solution pretty soon, then you know clubs are going to go under, and they have the opportunity here to stop that from happening.
Terry, are we seeing what is going to play out across Europe here in Scotland? Are we going to see similar things happening all over the shop with tiny petty rivalries coming out and forcing the hand of the sports bodies?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, for example, in Belgium, they've cancelled the season. We could all be forgiven for not knowing that, but they have.
Well done.
I mean, when I was playing devil's advocate and arguing the case, the commercial case for Bundesliga resuming, this was yesterday in Talking Football, and Nick said, oh, well, the Belgian league have cancelled. And I said, yeah, well, okay, they could probably pay back the £3.05 that the TV companies owe them for not completing that league. But, I mean, in senior leagues, I think things could get nasty. I mean, things are falling apart in different kinds of ways. I mean, there was reports in Barcelona that there's a massive boardroom split about the manner with which the club is dealing with COVID-19. They've had to get their players to take a massive pay cut. COVID-19 has exposed the fractures in that club and just how poorly run Barcelona is. It will be difficult to see under those circumstances what kind of consensus might emerge in La Liga, particularly in view of, you know, you were not just Real Madrid and Barcelona, but you've also got, you know, rivalries all the way down that league in, you know, in Sevilla and elsewhere, that could go nasty. But again, Spain is one of the hardest hit countries in the world. And so for them, this may take on a different meaning. It may be a slightly different, you know, context. So I think, you know, it will depend on how everyone is managing and what the public mood is, I think, to a certain degree as well. So I don't think it's necessarily what would happen. I mean, I think it'll be an absolute shit fest if the Premier League was to try and cancel its season. Because for reasons that we talked about in previous podcasts, I think the fact that we've got Liverpool at the top of the table so close to winning the title for the first time in 30 years, I think it's going to be a massive, massive problem. And similarly with Leeds United as well in the Championship. And that's just the beginning of it. So I wouldn't like to think too hard or imagine what would happen. It could be very painful if the situation doesn't look like it's changing here very soon. They might have to start making really tough decisions.
I've seen lots of people come up with their own solutions for ending seasons like the Premier League season, whether that be like points per game or just by doing some kind of algorithm to work out what the remaining results would be. But there isn't any consensus on any of these formats. And when I've looked at them, different clubs have been relegated out of them because it's so tight at the bottom. There are six clubs who are in a very, very precarious situation. Obviously, yes, Liverpool running away with the title, and that's one thing they all agree on. And I think mostly these are things just to placate Liverpool fans, to make them feel like, yes, okay, the maths works out for you. Everything will be fine. We've come to some agreement on this. There is no easy way of saying, right, okay, this is how it would have happened if we were allowed to play these games. Guys, we're in mid-April now. The Premier League, they said 30th of April, didn't they, for when they were hoping to get back, which is obviously looking ridiculous at the moment. All right, Germany has gone back into training. but that's going to be at least 2 weeks before you've got this social distancing, no tackling, no handling the ball version of football. You've got at least a month of that before you can either consider going to play a game, haven't you? At least?
I would think so, something along those lines. And I mean, just to me, a fact that, for example, I mean, they're not going to modify the rules of the game. I mean, if they're thinking about keeping VAR, they're not going to suddenly say, right, we're going to ban tackling. But I mean, you know, the reality is that, I mean, like a player gets injured in a football match. If they have to go off for treatment to a hospital, you know, German hospitals aren't as busy as they are in the UK, and they may well have the capacity, and I'm sure that they would do also because they've got money and they can, you know, like anywhere else, you can buy these things. But I mean, it's, you know, what message are you really sending out to people when you're, you know, behaving in a manner that really under these circumstances is reckless? On the other side of the coin is this. As I said earlier, a vaccine is probably 18 months away, if not more. So if football is going to come back between now and then it's going to be played behind closed doors. And we're just going to have to get used to that. Or we make a decision, or nations make a decision and say, no, we're going to have to just tough it out and wait until we can all come back, until everybody can come back again. But I suspect the reality is that there will be a huge economic cost to football by doing that. And yes, all right, okay, I think I mentioned last week the days of the £200 million Neymar transfer fee. I mean, it'll be a long time, if ever, before we see that beaten again. But the real cost, of course, is in the jobs, is in income, people's livelihoods that are based either working for football or directly with football. And that is a significant loss and something to be avoided. So, I mean, I think in the slightly more medium term, if it is possible to safely have these games played again behind closed doors, then maybe it is something that I think we should do for the good of the game in order to protect jobs and to protect income.
Well, okay, this is going to unfold more and more as the weeks go on. And so we'll definitely keep an eye on what's going to happen in Germany and also as well in Spain and Italy, see what their ideas are of coming out of lockdown, because there is talk already of them doing that. And just to see where things go as far as football is concerned. But for now, that's all we have time for. So from me, Graeme Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Yes.
Okay.